You're listening to the TriStar State, a podcast about Tennessee politics from Nashville Public Radio. This is the episode for the week of October 28th, 2018. Throughout this year's campaign, we've been interviewing the candidates for statewide office. This week, we talked to Phil Bredesen, the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Over a political career that's included Nashville mayor and governor of Tennessee, Bredesen has developed a reputation for working with Republicans. And if elected to the Senate, he says he'd continue to look for ways to compromise, even on hot-button topics like immigration. Bredesen recently sat down with WPLN's Chas Sisk and Sergio Martinez Beltran to talk about that and other big issues from the race. One side note, we also extended numerous invitations to Bredesen's opponent, Republican Congressman Marsha Blackburn. So far, her campaign has not responded.
A frequent criticism of Phil Bredesen among left-leaning voters is that he doesn't do enough to help other Democratic candidates or to advance Democratic causes. And Bredesen makes no bones about it. He says his loyalty to the party has its limits.
It's an organization that I belong to. It's one I chose for politics. It's not a religion. I don't think that everything that the Democratic Party says is automatically correct. And I don't think, as I've said a couple of times, I don't think if Chuck Schumer or whoever is majority leader gets mad at me that I will, you know, go to hell as a result of that. So I sort of feel free to say, you know, it embodies a basic set of values that I, you know, many of which I share. But I feel perfectly free to be with the party when it makes sense and, you know, not otherwise. When I was governor, a lot of these things with Medicaid that we've just taken care of, we've just been talking about, drove National Democrats crazy. Certainly things like, the work we did with workers' comp reform drove a bunch of Democrats crazy. On the other hand, the pre-K expansion they loved. The test for me has always been, look, you got to belong to a party to run in politics, but my obligation is to the people of Tennessee, and whether it's the president or one of the parties, if they're for something that I think is really good for the people I'm representing, I need to be for it. But if they're not, I don't feel any responsibility to put the Democratic Party or anybody else ahead of the people of Tennessee.
Who would you support for majority leader?
I certainly not put anybody in the spot in that fashion. But, it's when I say that, it's not so much a, like, I think that Chuck Schumer is a bad guy. I think it's more that I've found sometimes in both politics and business, when things get all as messed up as they are right now, sometimes you just got to change the players. You know, people have gotten frozen into their positions, and everybody's got lots of baggage from all the battles past. Sometimes it's better to just change the players around. And I suspect, and I suggested it really in both parties, and I suspect there's plenty of people in both parties and in both arms of Congress who could perform this and would not come in with all that kind of baggage.
So you talk about the baggage, and again, you've avoided Chuck Schumer in terms of supporting him, but then you went a couple of weeks ago to New York for a fundraiser with Michael Bloomberg.
Sure.
What do you tell to people that might be thinking, well, he's avoiding one, but he's going to this other fundraiser?
Well, Michael Bloomberg is not a U.S. senator or an elected official of the United States governor or anything else. He's a guy who I worked with some when I was governor, was very helpful to me and to Tennessee on a number of educational issues. I certainly has invested some money in them. And just like anybody who runs for office, if, you know, someone is willing to raise money for you, who's a respectable person, I wouldn't go do something else. But, you know, he is certainly, he's the head of one of the largest media companies in the world. He's a former mayor of New York. People have talked about him running for president the next time. I mean, that's somebody whose support I certainly invite. There are plenty of areas where I don't agree with him. You know, probably starting with he's much less. I'm pretty supportive of the Second Amendment on stuff, and he's, you know, very much in another place. But that doesn't mean that I would say, oh no, I can't be seen with you or anything. I appreciate his help.
So on the Kavanaugh vote, you came out with a statement and said that you would have voted for him. First of all, why did you make that statement at all? Why did you feel like you needed to say something on that?
I felt like I needed to because I had promised during the course of the election that I wanted to obviously hear all of the all of the arguments, and I'd promised before the vote actually happened that I would say something. The whole thing to me was such a disaster. I mean, I don't think either Republicans or Democrats heaped any credit upon themselves in the way that whole thing happened, and I thought the way that Dr. Ford was treated by simply, you know, in essence, sweeping her statements kind of under the rug, and then under pressure doing a very short, very incomplete sort of FBI investigation of them was not the way it should happen. I hope that if there were ever a time when I was senator and someone else came up from either party, I'd hope to be part of an effort to do it in the way the founders intended, which is, look, let's put this person on the table. I really believe that, you know, that the advice and consent ought to be about their qualifications and fitness to be, to be a Supreme Court justice, not their political leanings. You know, it's not that long ago when, you know, a Scalia and a Ginsburg, who couldn't be more unlike politically, could both get 95-plus votes in the Senate because they met the standard of these are reasonable people who are qualified and, you know, and intellectually capable of doing the job. I'd like to get back to that.
We've heard of volunteers who've left the campaign because they were upset with your statement. Did you expect that reaction?
I expect, you know, whenever you make any statement, you know, like that, you're going to have that. I think a lot was made out of that. I think there were a few volunteers who called in, and most of them have come back and said, you know, I was mad that day. It's still a lot better to be here. I think they're virtually all back at this particular point. But, you know, my objective in politics has always been to just kind of say say what I believe and let the chips fall where they may. And on that one, I probably lost some people. And there's probably something else I said where I lost somebody else, but you also pick up supporters at the same time.
Well, to that point, do you feel like you've picked up Republican and independent supporters for that statement?
The answer is, of course, I don't know specifically because the volunteers are a little easier to measure in that regard. But yeah, I feel certainly that there were a lot of people who were undecided about it, about who to be for, but for whom wanting to have a more conservative justice was a sort of an important component to it. And if I'd been opposing him, particularly on, I'd say, political grounds, I think it was a problem. It could have been a problem for him. But look, that's behind us. I listened to all the evidence. I thought the whole thing was royally messed up. I did the best I could at the end there with a statement. And, you know, I mean, for everybody now, we're on to other stuff.
Let's talk about immigration now. Governor, do you see saving DACA and funding border protection as two separate issues?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's, I think, talk about border protection. I mean, I think we absolutely have got the right to control our borders. And, when I was governor, we were one of the very first, I want to say first or second state, to actually send National Guard troops down when we were asked to help support border control in the Arizona area. And I went down with them and so on. I think that's exactly right. I've never thought much of the wall, but it's because I think it's a kind of a 1950 idea about how to control the border when there's just vastly more effective and quicker to deploy things now we have with electronic sensors and drones and all the kinds of technology that you can deploy. The DACA, young people, kids, whatever you want to call them, I'm strongly supportive of stabilizing their presence and giving them a path ultimately to citizenship. These were people who were brought here. They didn't make a choice to come. A lot of them are now getting to an age where, you know, you got to start making plans with your life. You got to think about going to college or getting married and getting a job and so on. And, you know, being in this, never land of not knowing whether you might be deported or not and so on is a terrible place to be. I think we've got a moral obligation to sort that one out. You know, I don't think you should ever use children and, as pawns in that way in some political debate.
If you get elected in November, though, you might, eventually have to vote on a compromise bill, sure. One that tries to save DACA and fix the program, and one that would, be allocating money to fund that wall, President mm-hmm. Trump's wall. So would you be voting for that?
I mean, if there's a compromise bill coming up, I'm going to do what I always did. I mean, I made as governor and as mayor a lot of compromises to get something done. I mean, I think I would just look at the entirety of the thing and see whether, you know, the parts of it that you had to hold your nose about were greater or less than the things that you thought were a step forward. I mean, I certainly wouldn't hypothecate about a bill. I actually would like to see both parties stop trying to do the comprehensive thing, because I think the DACA thing is so easy and so immediate and is so broadly supported across the country that I think if both parties would just stop trying to, you know, incorporate a bunch of other stuff in it and get a clean bill there, that it would get, I think it would get taken care of.
When you say easy, what do you mean by that?
Just because I think it introduces very few of the things that people get upset about with others. I mean, you know, while I think we need to deal with the 10 plus million undocumented immigrants, we need to deal with that issue in some fashion. It clearly is a different issue of someone who is an adult and knew what they were doing across the border. It's very different than a 5-year-old being brought here by parents and growing up here. I mean, I've met a lot of these DACA kids. I mean, they're as American as the next person, and just, you know, in many of these cases, and they got no more connection to Guatemala or Mexico or something than I do. And I'd hate to be, somebody be threatening to deport me to a country where I didn't speak the language and had no connections or anything like that. I think the DACA thing is a really clean issue that any person of good, of good faith could see their way to dealing with that issue and helping stabilize these kids and then get on to talk about some of the tougher issues.
Now let's talk about gun control.
Sure.
The NRA endorsed Congressman Marsha Blackburn. They gave her an A rating. You've tried to make your case that you were endorsed as a governor by the NRA, that also you believe that sensible gun laws are the way to, you know, that's what we should be doing. If you become senator, what will you specifically do to address this issue?
The thing that I think is really important that you can do and ought to have broad support and doesn't get into every underlying cultural issue that goes with the Second Amendment is, I think, first of all, you really ought to have universal background checks, close up that gun show loophole. And I can't imagine a reasonable person finding that offensive. Frankly, I've talked to a lot of people who are very strong on the Second Amendment, who are perfectly willing to go along with that. Second of all, I think the background check process, the NICS process, needs to be properly organized and funded. NICS is not adequately funded, so it is often slow in performing these checks, and there's an automatic issuance of the permit if the check is not done in time. And also, these databases are only as good as the information which is provided to them, which is provided by everything from county governments and city governments and the military and everything else, and I think that needs to be paid attention to. And then third of all, I believe there ought to be a judicially moderated process by which somebody who certainly appears to be temperamentally or psychologically not equipped to exercise this particular right responsibly, that there's some effective way of removing guns from their control and preventing them from getting new ones. Frankly, I think in two of the last three school shootings, they were both people who were clearly identified as problematical, and I think really could have helped with those. I just look at those as being straightforward, reasonable things that you could do that I think no reasonable exerciser of their First Amendment rights should object to too strongly. I grew up in a rural community. I've been a gun owner all my life. I shoot target. I've gone hunting plenty of times. I mean, I'm not averse to the idea at all. I think the Second Amendment is an important right, but I don't think that means you can't put any sort of reasonable regulations to protect people. We've got a First Amendment, but you can't go in a crowded theater and yell fire. I mean, that's not protected under the First Amendment, and people see that as sensible and ought to see some of the Second Amendment stuff as sensible.
Most of the gun laws in this country are at the state level. As a senator, would you propose legislation that would do those things that you say are sensible gun laws?
Well, I think those, the ones I've just talked about, are federal laws. I mean, it's the the background checks and NICS are both federal programs, and I guess I wouldn't try to impinge upon the state's ability to enact laws when there's some federal laws that need addressing right now.
I think you mentioned red flag, though. That's typically done at the state level. Is that something you would introduce at the federal level?
Yeah, you're right about that. I think probably that's something which, it perhaps could have a federal component. The courts that might look at that would probably end up being the state courts. I mean, we can figure out a way to do that.
Republican groups have been hammering away in ads at your handling of sexual harassment claims against the top aide when you were governor. How do you think you would handle those allegations now?
I think they were handled exactly right then, and I think I would handle them exactly the same way now. That whole thing is a outrageous perversion of what actually happened. We had an incident when I was governor toward the end of my time when a man who worked for me harassed or assaulted is probably a more correct word, a woman. I found out about it the next day, talked to both him and the woman involved. It had to be within 24 hours, determined to my satisfaction that he had done something, and he was gone immediately. The woman was sent over to Human Resources so that she could have a chance to talk through what her rights were under this. I mean, is there some way that, did she have legal rights that she needed to exercise and somehow to get that? Those records are public records of those conversations. So it had been their policy to not retain those records after the conversation had been had, any notes they might have taken, so that, someone can't come in, the next day and they find out all the gory details of what had happened to them was on the evening news or the front page of the paper. I don't think anybody would ever go talk to somebody about this harassment if they thought that were going to happen. I mean, it was intended 100% to protect the privacy of the victim and to get them to come forward and describe their thing. And the way in which my opponent has sort of perverted that into something totally different is, it's outrageous. This is a serious issue and should not be weaponized in that way and certainly shouldn't be lied about in the way that's happened.
What about your involvement with Silicon Ranch? Because that also created, at the end of your tenure, that also created a lot of controversy. Like, people were talking about it. Is that something you would handle different today?
Yeah, I don't. First of all, I don't think it generated a lot of controversy. There was an article or two at the time, and it has come up again. What I did is in previous lives and companies, I had frequently helped people who I'd worked with in the company to start something new as the company was coming to a close. I think I did it with four separate people when Health America was sold, the company that I had originally started. Two people who worked for my company, for the administration, were just going into business, and I talked with them and I helped them to get started. I guess if I had thought it was going to be an issue 8 years down the line with somebody or other, I would have looked at more carefully what I did, but there's nothing I did that was remotely wrong. I didn't spend any time on the thing. I invested some money so that somebody who had quit their job could go out and prepare a business plan. And then, the company got going, and it's been a very successful company and grown and provided a lot of jobs here in Tennessee. And I'm very proud of it. I've been a successful entrepreneur several times over. I make no excuses for that. I'm sorry if anyone took offense at the way it happened at the time, but there was nothing wrong with it. And the current governor certainly makes investments from time to time in things, and certainly previous governors had done the same thing. There's nothing special about what I did.
Sort of to that end, about the governor making investments, senators making investments. Senators are often privy to inside information about businesses and about legislation. What would you do to keep your financial interests separate from your public duties?
Yeah, I think the most important thing there is if you looked at my financial disclosure, for reasons that have nothing to do with running for office, most of the assets are held in what would be effectively mutual funds and big pools of funds. And that has always struck me as kind of the best way to do that. I mean, that way you have no control over what's in those funds. You probably don't even know what stocks and so on are being held. And so you can participate in that way without worrying about that. I have a few stocks that are left over from the 1990s that I will eventually, because they have large gains, probably give to charity. I would like to, if I'm elected, clean those up so I did not have any individual stock holdings in anything. And then I think that would be perfectly. I think that would then be fine. Any private companies that I had an interest in, like Silicon Ranch, I said I would resign any position with the company, the board position, and so on. You can't easily just sort of sell those; they kind of sit there. But I would certainly be sensitive about recusing myself from any vote or anything that in any way affected that company.
Would you move those stocks and mutual funds into a blind trust?
I probably wouldn't put them in a blind trust just because I think there'd be no reason to do that if they were in the mutual funds. I mean, so I know that I own a cross-section of the Fortune 500 companies or something like that. I can't see what's wrong with that and why you'd need to put that in a blind trust. It certainly is in the interest of the country that I work to help the prosperity of Fortune 500 companies or something. But I probably would not do that. It certainly isn't required, and most people, in fact, I don't know of a senator who does that specifically with any holding like that.
Governor, I was driving today. I heard an ad where you're talking about removing, or at least making sure that we know the messenger might be different from the message. When we talk about, removing the messenger from the message, and you say, sometimes I don't agree with how sure. He says things, but I agree with some of the things that would impact Tennessee in a positive way. Do you think you agree with 50% or more than 50% of the policies coming from the Trump administration?
I'm not going there. I think what I said was I learned a long time ago that, to separate the message from the messenger. Look, there's lots of things I don't like about the way Donald Trump handles himself in doing it. It's the sort of complete counterpoint of what my sort of approach to politics has always been. But I'm just saying at some point you set that aside and say, okay, what is actually being proposed here? And don't prejudge it on the quality of the idea, not on whether or not you happen to like the messenger on that particular on that particular day. And I think that's an important principle. And I certainly intend to continue doing it. There have been points where I disagreed with them, tariffs. There have been points where I agreed with them. I've said, for example, I give him some room to work on the North Korea problem. We've had three presidents from two parties who sort of failed miserably at getting any progress there. Maybe a totally different approach, like his, will yield something. I certainly would give him some elbow room to try to work that.
All right. Well, we thank you for your time. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
That was Senate candidate Phil Bredesen speaking to WPLN. You can hear more coverage of the Senate race, including profiles of Bredesen and Congressman Blackburn, by visiting WPLN.org/elections2018. While there, check out our other interviews with the major party candidates for governor, Democrat Carl Dean and Republican Bill Lee.